Good morning.
Pleasure. Morning, everyone.
Good morning. So just a housekeeping note that I've been reminded to put over to everybody. These meetings are now going to fortnightly. And the reason they're going to fortnightly is because we've found that people are getting more busier as we come out of the lockdown, and people are returning to work in some greater fashion than they were previously. So we considered this as an executive team last week, and we thought we'd go fortnightly and then review it again towards the end of August. People still consider them of value, obviously, but we numbers have reduced a little bit, so we've gone from having about 14 to today around about 7 or 8. So it's understanding what your needs are as much as everybody else's. So don't look out for a meeting next week, it's the week after. Georgina will give me the thumbs up, hopefully, for remembering that. So the question today was around peer-to-peer group mentoring. And the reason I'm posing this question is, do they work? And if so, how can we make them work? Is that we were contacted by Bayes about 14 days ago to take part in a business support organisation survey that they were running, as they are considering post-COVID-19 lockdown to support financially the setting up of peer-to-peer mentoring groups on a virtual basis or on a real face-to-face, one-to-one basis, if obviously lockdown and social distancing rules can be met. So I thought it was, I mean, we responded to that on from a business support organisation perspective and from our business client perspective. I'd already put out a survey some time ago, right at the very beginning of the pandemic, asking about peer-to-peer mentoring. And so I wanted to get your views on how you believe this could be rolled out. And what I'm trying to get at is that I'd like the ABM to be in a position where we can either bid or go for or put in a evaluation to Bayes to make this happen and work. My own view is that, and I'm sure Peter Liner will back me up on this because he's actually run a very successful peer-to-peer group coaching business for a considerable period of time, is that they take a lot of work. And the facilitator has to be an expert at what they do. And it's not just attending a 90-minute, two-hour or three-hour meeting. It's everything that goes along with that in managing it, operating it, and responding to the participants' needs and questions and challenges. So there's a couple of questions that Bayes put to us as a business support organisation. And the first couple were, do you think there is a demand amongst SMEs for peer networking? They use the term networking. Whatever you want to call it. Do you think they can be run successfully virtually? And Peter may have something to say about that. What do you think the SMEs are most likely to want to discuss during those meetings? Which I think is a bit of a naive question on the part of the Bayes staff team, but that's because they don't really know what businesses need or want or desire. So I just wanted to put those out to you as professionals in mentoring and coaching as to how you feel we could, as an ABM, support that initiative if it goes ahead. And they're talking about 6 sessions of 2 hours each with not a scheduled frequency yet, but they're still trying to understand it. And they would fund it. So I wondered if anybody would like to put their hand up and help me support those answers. Anna.
Hello. I do peer-to-peer supervision as part of my coaching, which is something I've done for several years. So I would be very happy to provide insights and experience and sort of like a structured way of facilitating the group going forward, so I can sort of, you know, share my experiences and advice and stuff like that.
Okay, that's really helpful. Thank you very much.
Perspective.
I would also add to that I'm more than prepared to share my experiences of what I've done by going virtual with my groups. certainly the first thing that I learned was that you can't spend a day together as we did before face to face. So I've broken that down into two sessions. And what I do in my particular model is that we have a speaker session for the first one that's from 2.5 hours to 3 hours with regular breaks. And that's on a topic that is really up to date and core to all the other members. And then the second session, which is 2 weeks later, so we're having two meetings now rather than one, we go through accountability and the ABLE clinic, which is really handling the dilemmas, opportunities, and challenges that they have. But what we found really worked, coming back to a point you raised, Simon, is that prior to that meeting, at least a week, we ask them what challenges or issues they have. And then we can compile that list prior to the meeting so everyone has got an idea of what it's going to be about, so they get a really honed session and covering off as many of them as we can in the afternoon. So that's really the basic one that I'm now working on that's proven to be really successful.
And do you think the success of the group sessions themselves are down to the facilitator as well as the attendees, or is it, it has to be fairly well structured, I would imagine, to make it work?
Yeah, you've got to have a structure to it. And what I've learned from Nigel Risner, who's one of my top speakers, is that you've got to keep people in the room, particularly when it's virtual. It's even more important because you need to keep them interested. It needs to be engaging and make sure everybody takes part. So there is a lot of pressure on the facilitators to make sure that it's organized well. There is a really good structure to it. And then you facilitate it well so that everyone gets a fair chance, because you will get a session where someone is more forceful and going on a little bit, and you need to subtly control that to give other people an opportunity. But it's the feedback that's important.
Sure, and the need to draw some people into the conversation that maybe not fully appreciative of, you know, them actually taking part is the effectiveness of the session. And virtually, I'd imagine that's a little bit more challenging than if you're sitting around a table with a nice croissant or a bacon roll or a cup of coffee.
Well, yeah, but again, I think I'm learning, to be honest, as we're going on. We're continually improving as we do it. But because you've got a gallery, what we tend to do is it works for 10 to 12 people. If you go beyond that number, then you're going to have a problem. So ideally, it would be 10. But on the gallery, you can actually see who's taking part and who isn't, and drag them into the conversation. But equally, you've got to control it so that everyone gets a fair chance. So yeah. I can say, can you put your hand up or use the reaction? And I acknowledge people wanting to contribute. Because what you're trying to do is get spontaneity. That once I want to respond to that. So yeah. We're learning as we go along, though, Simon.
Yeah.
Can I ask Simon?
Tim, carry on, please.
A quick question to Peter. I've seen Nigel present in real time, and he's incredibly entertaining.
Yeah.
I wondered how much of the dynamic was lost then online. And I don't mean that in a condescending way, but I've just been interested.
That's a very good point.
That is a great question. And really, again, what I've learned from this, there are some speakers that can actually do their thing on Zoom and others that cannot, in order to keep that energy. So that's been an interesting journey, because I've got to rely on the feedback from my members, is that in some sessions initially, we did have a problem where we lacked the interactivity. So that is a challenge. So you've got to be very comfortable that when you're bringing a speaker in, and when I say speaker, this speaker could be one of the ABM members that's got a speciality in a particular area that can talk about it. You've got to really challenge them on whether they're comfortable doing a Zoom call, because fair play to a number of my speakers, they've said, Peter, it won't work on Zoom. And that's a very good point, Tim.
Mm.
And Peter, can I, sorry, Pete, Simon, can I just ask another question of Peter?
David, please.
Really interesting, Peter, thank you. Are these groups, Peter, that you recruited in the real world and have migrated to virtual, or have you recruited into the virtual world?
Oh, what a fabulous question, David, because let me answer that in two ways. One, they are, in fact, recruited in the real world. I made the point, Simon, originally, and I have actually told or discussed this with Gary as well last year, that I was interviewed about doing my groups virtually, and I said, no way, it will never work because of the face-to-face interaction. I've been proven wrong. But I think the case here is that by doing what I've done now, I think if you've got a group of people that did it face-to-face with you and are now doing Zoom, they want to go back to face-to-face. My logic and what I'm doing, sharing with you confidentially, I'm actually putting a virtual group together now because my ethos is if they've never experienced the face-to-face, then they don't know what they've missed. And I think with the view that people are taking using Zoom, I'm pretty comfortable that I'd be able to get a virtual group up and running as well. And the benefit of that is it won't just be where I operate in London. It could be anywhere around the country. It could be internationally, where you get the time zone sorted. So I definitely think there is a market for this.
What do you see as the... thank you, David. Excellent question. A question to all of you, but obviously Peter, because your experience in this sector, what do you think are the main benefits that business owners get out of such an event?
I think the key thing is one of the questions I pose to new people is that I would say to them, how would you feel if you were part of a community that have already solved the problems that you currently have? And that really gets them thinking. And that's essentially it. I'm very blessed to be in something I've been doing for a number of years now, where I tend to essentially facilitate, but it's just getting that community of like-minded people that are there, and quite a lot of them just get a buzz out of helping each other, not so much solving their own problem. So that, I think, is the core part of it, to be honest.
I think also what I've seen particularly is once people get used to this dynamic, actually having the opportunity for maybe an hour and a half to a really well-facilitated interaction, it saves so much time. They could do it 7 o'clock in the morning, for example, and then get on with their day, and they've been enthralled, they've got something out of it, and they can just get back onto work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, if I may add in, I agree with that. I think it's the huge dynamics of collaboration, isn't it?
You've lost Helen.
Hello.
Ah, got her back.
Back. I lost everybody there. It just went all Dalek-y on me. I was trying to say that, yes, I've been involved in peer boards and things and that sort of thing. And I think it's the huge dynamic of collaboration. Mm. And once people get into the flow and they get the understanding and how to contribute and give and take away, it's remarkable, I think, to see that sometimes people who haven't got a certain issue, but they hear it spoken of, it can be very boosting and add a lot of value to their own business when they hear others have similar or likewise. Do you know what I mean?
I'm still a bit
about it, and certainly from a virtual point of view, but I'm like you, Peter. I was like completely virtual had a place, but it certainly wasn't part of my daily routine. However, we've all had to kind of jump into a different bond now, haven't we?
Yeah.
And you know, there will be certain things that, you know, I actually will not change now. And one or two of my committee things, you know, we will not go back to traveling at 7 a.m. just to go for a meeting that we're all giving of our own time.
100%.
You know, just to sit in traffic, because the idea was we all wanted to be free and done by 9:30. But no, that won't be happening. We'll always be doing them virtually. But yes, I think there is a place for these peer-to-peer, and they're very valuable when you, if people kind of get the real concepts of what they're about.
Yeah, totally agree.
I think if I can add to what Helen and Peter have just said, I think it's that mastermind concept, isn't it? And I think people are becoming increasingly willing to do things virtually when they know that they can be in contact with the people that really connect with what they're looking to do themselves. Mm. And so, you know, if you can have a virtual network of people that are like-minded, facing similar challenges, and you know that they're going to listen, be respectful, and help you come up with the solutions, then I'm certainly seeing people not caring where they are. It's that ability to connect. And if you can do it virtually, then I think people are really, really keen to save that travel time and to be able to do it as part of their day, but not the main part of their day. So I think there's a huge appetite for it, and definitely increasing.
Mm. I do think Peter has a very valid point, though, about people who speak or are hugely involved from an engagement perspective, because there are some people that just can't virtually. And, you know, when all this first arrived on us and everybody took everything virtual, I've sat through some difficult online experiences when people don't engage and they're not, you know, the voice tone doesn't encourage or, you know, enable you to listen easily, if you see what I mean, and follow. So I do think that there is a danger moving forward long term that we go too much the other way, because for me there is still nothing like the bond building being face to face with somebody.
Well, Helen, how about this for a suggestion? I mentioned earlier on that I'm putting a virtual group together. My thought on that is that it's great over a year to have these virtual meetings. But my thought was that during the summer, that we would get a place equidistant between everybody where we actually meet face to face, so that you actually get that opportunity to get together and really cement the bonding that you've built up during the virtual. Because
Peter, I'm a sales animal, and I've spent my life in the sales arena and training people and working with them, and I'm all over the, you know, I'm a giddy kipper, I've adapted, and I think it's wonderful. But there is nothing, you know, nothing like the face-to-face engagement for engendering trust and building rapport.
Yeah.
Well, the challenge is that that's how we've been brought up and how that's the dynamic that we're used to. But actually, we've got to get used to how another generation and other generations wants to do this.
It's not just that for me. I think it's just how you are as a person. I mean, I think we've all managed to get used to it. We've got to, we've had to. And I know what you're saying. I've always laughed and said, oh, well, I'll show my age. I'd rather get in the classroom, please, you know. But, I think there's massive value and economically and environmentally and everything else, you know, keeping us off the roads and peak times and all the rest of it. Fantastic. I just am saying that I don't think we should ever forget the value of real interaction.
Sure. But I wonder if there's an opportunity also to help us all become better at doing this. Is there learning internally that we can do to share so that we become better online presenters?
Peter, can I ask Peter a question? What does he think makes the difference between a good presenter via a virtual format versus somebody who just can't cut it? What do you see that works well, Peter?
I think it's really down to, one, the topic, and two, the individual. If the individual is aware that they cannot have that interactivity you get face to face, then you change the way that you present your topic and get more engagement. Get engagement from everybody, and that tends to work. But I think the key thing is the topic, the ability to be able to recognize that you cannot get that same energy and therefore get engagement with everyone in the group. And the important thing with that, I found, is that prior to my meetings, I have an in-depth discussion with the speaker. So they're fully aware of the individuals that are going to be there, their key topics, how they respond. So you're working together as a team with the speaker. And that, I think, has proven to be the point.
Gary, you wanted to say something? You're on mute, Gary.
I am, sorry. As some of you are probably aware, I've run my own peer group as well for 5 years, and I mirror a lot of what's been said. I think for me, it is knowing that you don't need to be alone. It's knowing that others have solved the problem, so it gives you confidence that yours is solvable. But, you know, most of us, for what we do as business mentors, we're likely to be outgoing. We're likely to be extroverts, and an extrovert, by the pure nature of what an extrovert means, is you recharge by being around people. And I think the online model works, because I think a lot of us are not going to want to go back to traveling and center parking and all the cost and time associated with that. But for most of us, the reality is that it will never fully replace human contact, being face to face with somebody, seeing the body language, looking at their eye movement. Have you got the focus?
It's a really, really important issue.
Yeah. So I think Peter's idea of meeting virtually and then topping that up with a periodic face to face or a retreat or a social event is a perfect balance.
Yeah, the retreat, you've hit it on the head, Gary. Your retreat is the way to do it.
Yep. Just in the last few minutes of the session, actually we could talk another half an hour, but unfortunately it's only 30 minutes. Do you think that the members of the sessions need to be from one particular sector or of a specific size of business or in a particular region or a stage of business development or life cycle? Is there a magic wand, hat that we can use to put the best group together?
Well, I tend to do two different models. One is for the bigger companies,
yeah,
and one is for the smaller companies. That's number one. And number two, it's non-compete. So you do have to qualify the people that you're looking at bringing into the groups to begin with, because a lot of the sessions could get to a very, very personal business scenario, and you're not going to be able to share that if you've got a complete situation. So yes, there is a qualification process. Yeah.
And what's the best mix that works, Peter, in respect to sectors and maybe regionalised or not regionalised?
Well, the issue at the moment is with my live sessions, it's all around London and the South East, and it's literally going with businesses that don't compete, and that's exactly what I have. It's non-compete, and it varies, but what I've learned on my journey, it's not always the size of the business, it's the individual. So I do have a mixture in the groups that, when I said the bigger businesses, we do have a smaller business in there because the dynamic was right. It's more about the individual, but I think the key is that you do need to qualify the people to begin with, so that you have a core structure, and really you need to work with at least six people to get the dynamic going. But yes, you do need to qualify them to begin with.
The other challenge I just want to consider with our session today is, obviously your sessions are paid for, Peter, as probably Gary's are as well, within the packages that you develop and offer. If Bayes are considering supporting this financially and then not asking businesses to financially contribute, do you think that will have a detrimental effect on the dynamics of the group and people turning up, you know, week in, week out and so on?
Well, the lesson I've learned is that the value that you offer is that people buy the value. So if you're offering a lot of value, people are prepared to pay for it. I think now it depends how that's structured. I mean, that's a good question, and it's something, because I'm charging for the service and the IP that I'm offering. So, good question. I think it needs to be thought through carefully on how that's sold, because I assume that they will only sponsor that for a period of time. So therefore, what you want to do is have continuity after that period of time that it continues on, but they've got to understand, by the way, this will now be paid for.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, because with so many funded programs, they go for a certain period of time, stop, and then poor participants fall off the end of the cliff and suddenly have no longer, you know, that great support that they experience.
Exactly.
I think having a bit of skin in the game focuses the attention.
I did
a lot of work with the Growth Accelerator program, for example, where you had stuff given to people, and you had a mixture of people that were contributing more took it seriously. People that had something for nothing just fancied it was, well, we'll give it a go, but really didn't have any their heart in it.
Yeah. And therefore, the opportunity for them to turn up week after week or fortnight after fortnight is lessened, I think, because they haven't got that skin in the game. Like you said, Peter, that's my view. Are there any other comments in respect of peers that we could go back to Bayes with as they come out with this support package? Gary?
The only thing for me would be, and it's along that kind of investment lines, is rather than have something that just runs ad infinitum, you could have something that runs for a short period of time. Maybe just say, look, this is going to be 4 sessions over 4 months, and you tackle these particular 4 topics, rather than normally what you do as a round table is you'd say, what's your biggest issue? And you put somebody in the spotlight. What you say is, look, these are the 4 issues or 5 issues that we know that business owners of this avatar are facing. So for the next 5 sessions, we're going to tackle these 5 issues because we know they're going to be relevant to all of you. And if you do that for a period of time, it limits the long-term exposure. But then you say, look, if this format's working and you're getting value and you want to move on to something where we can tackle bespoke issues, then here's the program at this investment that's available to you. So do it as a kind of short stepping stone onto something else.
Yeah.
David, do you want to come in?
It was almost the identical point, Simon, which I think your third question was, what topics do they think, did we think might be in there? And I wonder if they're envisaging it as some sort of curriculum in much the way that Gary said.
Yeah, quite. Yeah, which isn't going to work.
No.
It needs to be directly in for the need of the people sitting around the table and not so structured in that this week we're going to talk about funding, whether you want us to or not.
Yeah, exactly. That's the dilemma, I think.
Yeah,
I agree. Okay, look, time's 11:33, so I'd like to thank you so much for not just attending this session, but all of the sessions that we've had from the start of the pandemic. And I'd also like to thank Georgina for the and Jem for the administration around setting these up and running them in the background. It's been an enormous welcome opportunity for certainly me and the other exec members to help our member cohort, you people, and I really appreciate you taking part. And you know, to have them every single week for the last, I think it's now 11 weeks, has been great for me as a mentor, and also to get to know you better. So these are going obviously fortnightly from this week. I think Chris has the next chair.
Yes, it could be.
So we look forward to understanding what the topic on that is, and I'd like to wish you all a good week and a great weekend, and thank you very much. Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.